right back to offense. Go to Colts. Wow. Taylor's gone. Jonathan Taylor. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. As he crossed the tape at the goal line. 78 yards. And this is a nightmare for the Jets.
Thursday night football. The Jets lose their stud backup quarterback. He played great for one game, and that was that. And the Colts win last night. NFL football, week 9. 45-30 the final. Colts are 4-5. The Jets fall to 2-6. We'll preview NFL schedule and look ahead to the Chiefs and Packers coming up on Sunday afternoon at Arrowhead. Very important day today. Today is Friday, November the 5th. So, you know, it's a TGIF. Thank goodness it's finally Friday. Also, it's National Redhead Day. National Redhead Day. Do you know what the world's population constitutes of redheads? What the percentage is in our world? What's the percentage of people that have red hair in this world?
I'm going to say like 6%.
Ah, no, too high. 2%.
Really?
2% of our population is redheads. So that makes them very unique and special. And so I'm special because I have a redhead as my wife. So she's special. I'm special. But she's really special because she's married to me. No. it's special for me because I'm married to her. So it's her day. Also, if you're a redhead and you like donuts, this is the perfect day. Today's actually National Donut Day. And don't forget to fall back. Dusty, we gain an hour of sleep. I think you and I will accept that this weekend.
I need it.
Yeah, no kidding. So you stay up till 2 a.m. on Sunday morning, and then you move the clock back. You fall back an hour. So now it'll be, I won't change anything for Dusty. He rolls in here at 9 in the morning. But for me, it's going to be daylight when I come to work in the morning on Monday, and it'll be darker an hour sooner. So not as much time to play with the kids outside after work in the evenings. That's the one part I don't like about the change there. But it is what it is, and make sure you fall back or you're going to be messed up come Monday morning. But the good news is we gain an hour, and then we spring forward in the spring, and then we lose an hour. So it all evens out, I guess.
I guess.
All right, local sports. We got high school football playoffs tonight. Two games on the radio covering two area teams, but we're also going to preview the other matchups for teams in our listing area as well. So let's begin. But first, is there anything else local-wise we need to talk about besides football?
I think football's pretty much it today.
We'll jump into high school football tonight on Z96.3 The Lake and KDCountry94.com. Our live video stream at NCKSports.com via the Blake Trojan channel. It's the Class 2A regional round of the playoffs, otherwise known as the second round of the playoffs. Beloit at Cimarron. The Blue Jays come in a record of 7-2, their eighth straight playoff appearance, although they haven't had a lot of success in the playoffs. Last year, they had the forfeit in the second round of the playoffs at Hoisington due to three players testing positive for COVID, so it was a horrible way to end their season, much like Phillipsburg had to do the exact same week last year when they played Beloit. This year, Beloit Cimarron are going to play in the second round of the playoffs. Cimarron's two losses to Holcomb, a 3A school that's still alive in the 3A playoffs, they're 7-2. Cimarron's 7-2, and they have a loss that's really hard to explain. The final week of the regular season district play, they wrapped up the district title, but from what I understand and know, that pretty much everybody played, including their star quarterback, in that game, and they lost to Ellis, 15-14. However, they bounced right back last week with a big win over Norton, 51-27, and their quarterback, Braxton Harrison, really, honestly, almost beat Norton single-handedly. And you do think back to Beloit last year playing Haven. If you remember that playoff game, that was a double overtime thriller that Beloit won 32-26. And you give all the credit in the world to Beloit for winning that playoff game last year in Haven. But Darby Roper was a sensational quarterback. Wasn't a great passer, but man, he was tough to bring down, elusive. He was zigzagging all over the field. Beloit had no answer for him. And quite honestly, the Beloit caught a couple breaks in that game because the Haven coaches, for some reason, didn't give the ball to their star quarterback, who was unstoppable in that game when they had crucial close yardage situations at the goal line, including the stop that Beloit got at the very end to win the game in double overtime, Anthony Hinkey with the game-winning run. And so Beloit moved on to the state semifinals. So there is a little bit of concern there, I think, for some Beloit Trojan fans facing a quarterback that's mobile, who can run, who's very athletic. Braxton Harrison's his name for Cimarron. He's thrown for about 1,000 yards. He's rushed for about 1,000 yards. He's not particularly accurate, completing 50% of his passes, but I understand he has a cannon for an arm. Beloit's down a guy in their secondary. Logan Arrowsmith out with a collapsed lung last week, so Beloit's got to reshuffle the deck a little bit defensively, and that's important going into this game. Brad Gobert, head coach of the Beloit Trojans, He's been head coach 5 years. Beloit's going to the playoffs for the fourth straight year. Fourth straight year, Beloit's in the second round of the playoffs. State quarterfinals a couple years ago in 3A. Last year's state semifinals in 2A. Coach Gober knows that the key, the engine that makes the Cimarron team go, is their quarterback, Braxton Harrison.
He's what makes their engine go, and he does a lot of things for them with throwing the ball and running the ball. And, you know, he's a kid that's super athletic and can throw the ball a mile, so we have to be really good about staying on our guys and start scrambling and keeping them contained. And, you know, if we do that, we'll be okay.
Blue Jays have a couple good wide receivers. They have a running back that's run for almost 800 yards. Their quarterback, we mentioned, a dual threat. So that's going to be a challenge for Beloit defense. But this Beloit defense has been lights out. The last six games, they've allowed a total of 4 touchdowns, and the first-string defense has only allowed 3 touchdowns. So they're giving up 4 points per game the last six games, dominant against Lakin. You know, they Hoisington was held to 7 points. They lost that game 7-6. They only gave up one real drive in that game. I mean, the Beloit defense has been fantastic, and so you may sit here and say, okay, from a Beloit perspective, okay, a little bit concerned about the quarterback for Cimarron and their offense. They're averaging 33 a game. However, if you're Cimarron, how are you going to defend Beloit in their power running game and a play-action pass game? Because there's no doubt Beloit's got the advantage, at least it looks like on paper, in the trenches, and that's certainly got the attention of Mike Schartz, the head coach of Cimarron.
Oh, they're a very physical team. It's like Greg Koenig is still coaching there. just a little subtle changes, but, you know, when he came down here to Cimarron and we met and we were going to put in the double wing and that, I still – you know, their play-action pass game is very good, and they got some good tight ends, and you know, they're foot-to-foot, and they come off the football offensively. They're very physical on defense. They don't let people beat them. You know, they keep the ball in front and that. So it's just going to be a very, very physical football game.
Interesting game tonight. It's a contrast in styles. Cimarron's going to run the spread. They're going to throw it around a little bit. They're going to run. Beloit's got to maintain containment on Harrison. And if they don't, then he could run roughshod over Beloit like he did against Norton last week. Beloit, I think, has the better defense than Norton does. And so that'll be an interesting contrast in styles. You know, last time Beloit really saw a spread team was the second half against Concordia, and it didn't go very well for Beloit. However, they were also without two starters on defense. Now, since then, they've lost two starters on defense. Heiser Oates out for the year, and now Logan Arrowsmith is out. And that hurts them on offense and defense. Arrowsmith, Beloit's on, in essence now on their third string running back at one of the running back positions. And Tate Cadle, I think, will do just fine, a senior, and did a good job last week. But it's Barrett and Cadle. And, you know, if Barrett goes down, then where does Beloit go? If Cadle goes down, where do they go? Beloit doesn't have a lot of depth now at running back with Arrowsmith being out, who replaced Heiser Oates. So, you know, this is the challenge, and every team has to deal with it year in and year out. Injuries, we see it in NFL, we see it in high school, we see it in college. Do you have kids that can step up and fill the spots of the kids that are hurt? And we have seen so far, Beloit's been able to do that. But after a while, if you have too many at one particular position, as we see with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their secondary in the NFL having problems, it ends up really hurting you. You can only overcome so much. So Beloit can't afford another significant injury, I don't think, the rest of the playoff run here. So really, obviously, trying to stay healthy is a big thing. But this is going to be a contrast in styles, and I'm really intrigued by it because I think if Beloit doesn't turn the ball over and doesn't have penalties on offense, I think if they don't shoot themselves in the foot offensively, I think Beloit's going to be able to move it down the field and score fairly often. And then it's a matter of, okay, can you get maybe a turnover or two? Harrison Kidd, a little bit inaccurate, get a tip ball, bad pass, get pressure on him where he makes a bad decision. But they've got to contain him. The Harrison kid's going to get some runs tonight. He's going to make a few plays. There's no doubt. You just can't let him do what Darby Roper did to Beloit last year in the Haven game. If you do that tonight, now all of a sudden it's a wide open, anybody could win. But I think Beloit has the advantage, but it is a little bit scary going up against the spread that has given Beloit some problems the last few years.
Yeah, Chiefs offensive line last year too, if you talk about too many injuries at one position,
obviously,
right?
Tackle. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I feel like, you know, what I know from you that they'll be all right now at that position. But, again, if you have another one that would go down, then you're scrambling again, and you don't want, obviously, that to happen in mid-game either when you're trying to figure out something to do when, you know, Tate and Benson have all the reps this week, right?
Right.
So, but, yeah, from what I know about Cimarron, too, that quarterback is outstanding. And so if you can bottle him up a little bit and try to reel him in, and what he can do. Like you said, Roper went crazy last year. It was crazy to watch that because I didn't have a game that night.
I'm not trying to be mean here, but the only thing that stopped Roper last year was his own coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Beloit didn't stop him.
I remember
the Beloit
that,
coaching
yeah.
staff will be the first to tell you we didn't stop him.
Yeah.
I mean, he single-handedly almost won that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if the Harrison kid's as good as Roper. I don't think he is. I think he's
doesn't
good.
Doesn't sound like it, but, I mean, he's got a skill set
yes,
close to it anyway.
Yes,
so.
He does. Yeah, yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. Maddox Waters, Tyler Harmon, one of those will probably slide in to take the corner position to replace Aris Smith, who's out with a collapsed lung. And Logan just got out of hospital yesterday.
I saw that.
So great to
news,
hear.
Yep.
Great to hear there. He was in there a lot longer than some people maybe would have anticipated
mm-hmm.
with a collapsed lung. So we wish him a speedy health into recovery. And back to full strength in no time. Of course, Heisro's out for the year as well. So it'll be a very, very interesting game tonight. Beloit Cimarron. The other thing to point out is Beloit's got the 3.5-hour drive down there. So they got the long trip this time. Last week it was Lakin coming all the way to Beloit. Will that affect Beloit at all? I don't think it will, but you know, you never know. And it's new field turf down there. So you're playing on turf, which is a little bit faster mm-hmm. typically. And Beloit play Concordia on turf and so forth. So you can see a few things that you compare between that, but at the end of the day, I think Beloit, if they play their game and play like they're capable of on offense, I think the defense is going to make enough plays. The offense is going to have to put together. You know, that thing about the Beloit offense, they usually take a while to score. That actually could be a very good thing because you keep Harrison off the field tonight
mm-hmm.
when you're having a 10-play, 8-minute drive. And I think Beloit can do that tonight. I really do. But one injury could certainly change all of that.
Yes.
Beloit at Cimarron tonight on Z96.3 Lake. Pregame at 6:30. Kickoff at 7. And it's also online, KDCountry94.com. Our live video stream at NCKSSports.com. Be the Beloit Trojan channel. All right. Our game of the night tonight on KDCountry94 and KDCountry94.com starts a little bit earlier than normal. 5:30 pregame. Kickoff at 6. It's a rematch of a game played between Frankfort and Thunder Ridge in Kensington a few weeks ago that Thunder Ridge absolutely destroyed Frankfort. 60-12 game was called in the third quarter. But sometimes that rematch, and we saw this a few times last year, in the playoffs where teams are supposed to roll a team they already rolled and they got beat and upset. In fact, we saw that in the first round in 8-man games last week and other parts of the state. So, and things can snowball in 8-man so quickly. You know, a couple turnovers, a kick return for a score, an injury to a key player. So if you're Thunder Ridge, you better not take Frankfort lightly. Here's Joel Strukoff, head coach of the Longhorns on the keys, defending Frankfort tonight.
I think we just got to play sound football, stay true to our keys, flow in the right ways, and just making sure you're always doing the right thing defensively to slow them down. Because Frankfort's just going to run the same thing at you over and over again, and they're just going to just keep pounding it, pounding it, pounding it. You play disciplined football, you'll be put in a good position. But if you don't play disciplined football like we did, you know, one or two series against them last time we played them, they're going to make you pay for it because they're a team that's looking for 3 to 4 yards of carry. They're not really trying to bust you big, but they're going to keep pounding it all game long. So you have to stay disciplined.
Nick Anderson, head coach of the Frankfort Wildcats on the keys in playing Thunder Ridge a second time.
Well, obviously they're talented, and, you know, the Bice kid is as good as it comes as far as two-way quarterbacks. And, you know, we thought we were in position a vast majority of the time the first game. We just weren't able to make plays. And so we got to be better at doing that. And, you know, that's key. And, you know, on our end, you know, obviously playing a freshman quarterback, it's tough at times to make adjustments on the fly, but we're getting better in that area, and we're going to definitely need to throw the ball a little bit this week.
All right, Dusty. So a rematch of a game that Thunder Ridge won easily, but guess what? They don't start the game 60-12. They started 0-0.
Yeah. 0-0, yeah. Dylan Bice had a field day against this team last time they played. He went 6 of 7 for 140 yards passing and ran for 174 and 3 scores, and so obviously you heard Coach Anderson talking there at the beginning of that cut about how good Bice is, and you know that you got to try to bottle him up. But Thunder Ridge has really been able to balance that as the season's gone along and found a runner in Olin Brown that can really do a lot of good things with his physicality. And I think if Thunder Ridge just plays that brand that they played all year, they should be fine in this game. But one thing for Frankfort is you hear Coach Anderson talk about having a freshman quarterback, and one thing that you do know with a kid like that, as the season goes on, he starts to get a little bit better. He starts to understand what he's doing a little bit more offensively, and I feel like, you know, when you've had the reps that he's had now, that he probably even 3 weeks later is going to be better than the last time that Thunder Ridge saw him. So, you know, you do keep an eye on that, but this is a game for Thunder Ridge where, like Coach Chuckoff says, if they just play disciplined football, if they play the way they have all season long, they are a heavy favorite, and as I look at the numbers and everything that goes with it, it's hard for me to see Frankfurt winning this game. But again, you do have to go out and play the game. It's 0-0. You go out and play and see where the cards fall. But Thunder Ridge is definitely a favorite tonight.
All right, the scenario for Thunder Ridge, if they do win for next week?
If they win, they're on the road, okay. Most likely at Lebo.
Okay, that'd be a good road trip.
So, yeah, it'll be a road trip no matter what. But I'm looking at Lebo right now, the way things are playing out. They're on the road no matter what, headed east.
Okay.
Next week.
Beloit, from what I understand, is going to be at home no matter what. If they win tonight at Cimarron, Beloit will be at home next Friday. We know for sure against Hillsboro, because Hillsboro's had two home games, Beloit's had one. And if Chaparral beats Hillsboro, it is very close on the map, but we believe, unless somebody at Keisha has different eyes than we do, that's why I always hesitate. I looked at it,
I was like, whoa, that's really close.
I know.
That's like that year that Thunder Ridge and Otis Bison played, yeah.
Yeah, because me and Kyle Beisner both saw the same thing, but I wanted a third set of eyes, and I asked you last night, and you said, yeah, and I said, okay, if three people can come up with the same conclusion, hopefully Keisha will too when you look at the map. I think Hillsboro is going to beat Chaparral and it won't matter.
Yeah, I agree.
But it looks like if Beloit can win tonight at Cimarron, they'd have the state quarterfinals at home. There's even a scenario where Beloit would have the semis at home against Kingman. But that's if Kingman can get by, the next two games, including Hoisington. Now, of course, Beloit, if they play Hoisington, it'll be at Hoisington no matter what, because mm-hmm. Hoisington beat Beloit head-to-head in district play, winning district title by 1 point a few weeks ago. So those are the scenarios, pretty good scenarios for Beloit when you talk about travel the next week or two, possibly, with a win tonight at Cimarron. All right, Smith Center, Class 1A, they have a playoff game for the first time this year. They got a forfeit win over Wichita Independent last week. Darren Sass, head coach at Smith Center. They get ready for Whitewater Remington that comes to town tonight.
Like a lot of teams, good quarterback. You know, he throws a really good ball. Got some receivers to go get it. But, they run the ball well, too. They do some of the same things that we saw out of Inman, some of the jet sweep and some of those kind of things. So, again, looking at some of the scores against some of them and watching them on film, they're a quality team.
So Remington at Smith Center tonight, Class 1A regional playoffs. Smith Center, heavy favorite to win that game. Of course, down the line, you're looking at Smith Center Inman in a rematch is what people think, but they thought that last year and we were wrong.
Yeah, you got to go play it out. But right now, that's what it's looking like. I don't know if there's an Oakley that's going to come out of nowhere and surprise everybody this year in this bracket. I don't see that. But, you got to go out and play the games no matter what because, Smith Center was expected to beat Oakley last year and it didn't happen.
That's exactly right. Okay, so here are the matchups tonight in our area. We mentioned Thunder Ridge hosting Frankfurt tonight, 5:30 pregame on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. Remington at Smith Center in Class 1A regional playoff in Smith Center at 7 o'clock tonight. Beloit at Cimarron, 6:30 pregame kickoff at 7 tonight on Z96.3 Lake, katycountry94.com, and our live video stream. Chapman is at Southeast Saline in the 3A regional playoffs. Southeast Saline just doesn't hardly give up any points, and I think Southeast is going to win that game. That's tonight in Gypsum at 7 o'clock. The most intriguing game to me, outside of the games that we're doing on the radio, is Concordia at Riley County. And you may be saying, Wade, what are you talking about? Riley County beat Concordia 48-7 just a few weeks ago. Why is this an intriguing rematch? You have an idea why it's an intriguing rematch? Because I'm guessing you're not aware of the situation.
I'm probably not.
Last week, who did Riley County play? Russell,
yeah.
They won by three.
Yeah.
And guess what? Everybody was like, oh, my God, Russell's so improved. Russell's, like, so up and down. Which Russell team? Why is this happening? Okay, first of all, a lot of the Russell up and down had to do with COVID. Also had a lot to do with teams that were or were not at full strength. And then times when they weren't at full strength, they had Jesse Whitmer was out, their best player, due to injury. I mean, that's why it was up and down. You know why they almost beat Riley County last week?
Riley County was shorthanded.
Their first game of the year without their stud, and he is a stud, by the way, Trey Harmison. I mean, Riley County beat Silver Lake earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Riley County is legitimate. They're really good. They smoked Concordia just a few weeks ago for the district title. That was their first game without their stud quarterback. And if you take away a stud quarterback from any high school football team or even college or pro, as we've seen, it changes everything. Mm-hmm. And that was their first game without him. So it might be a blessing in disguise. They at least got a game before playing Concordia without their quarterback. Yeah. But they almost lost last week to Russell. But they were kind of like trying to figure things out because it's like starting over when you lose your stud quarterback. And so Concordia-Riley County, that will be a different type of game tonight. Mm-hmm. So that's why I find it intriguing.
For sure, yeah. I mean, that's always intriguing when you're trying to replace somebody that has the talent like that, then you have to go with somebody that doesn't have experience at the most important position, we all agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
That's why the Chiefs game's going to be interesting with the Packers and their quarterback making his first ever start. More on that in a little bit. State football playoff brackets and info, latest athletes of the week, which is the Smith Center Lady Red volleyball team. How can they not be? They were the first ever state championship in volleyball. Pretty doggone impressive. And our whole broadcast schedule and more and standings and schedules and news all posted there, ncksports.com. Sunflower Showdown, which I still think they need to quit saying showdown until KU can actually beat K-State in football. That's just my feeling on it. I feel weird saying showdown, because I don't think it's a showdown when one team is 1-6 or 7.
That's just branding is all that is.
I know. KU's 1-7. KU's 1-7. I look back at the playoff rankings the other night. You know, we were all riled up about it, but honestly, we overlooked something. KU had a very impressive first week win over South Dakota State. I think they should have been considered more for the playoff. KU 1-7 overall, 0-5 in Big 12 play. They're blown out of every single game except the one that makes no sense, where they almost beat Oklahoma at home. KU leads all-time series against K-State 64-49-5, but K-State's won each of the last 12 meetings and 25 of the last 30 dating back to 1991. That's domination, much like KU basketball has dominated K-State men's basketball, okay? K-State's got football, KU's got basketball. That's just the way it is. It's the yin and the yang, the ups and the downs. It's the 111th consecutive year of the Sunflower Showdown, or as I've been calling it recently, the Sunflower Beatdown, because that's pretty much what it is. The last K-State's won each of the last six meetings in Manhattan, and last year they rolled, of course, and had three special teams touchdowns, as Brian Haney pointed out yesterday, because KU was dumb enough to keep kicking it to a guy that keeps returning it. And I will say this. I think Lance Leipold's a much better coach than Les Miles at this point in Les Miles' career. I don't think KU was ready to go last year. It sounds weird to say, but I think they were caught up in the hubbub, and they liked to talk a little bit, but they had nothing to brag about. They hadn't won a game. And K-State always wins the special teams battle against KU. It's just hands down, you automatically chalk up that phase. They've got the more experienced quarterback, Skylar Thompson, as long as Skylar stays healthy. I don't see how K-State loses this game unless they absolutely shoot themselves in the foot. I will point out last year that KU was in position to really be in great shape at halftime if it wasn't for special teams. I mean, their offense moved the ball. Their defense wasn't bad, but it was Will Howard playing quarterback. It wasn't Skylar Thompson. I don't see KU winning this game. I'm trying to figure out a way that they're going to, and the only thing I can come up with is Jason Bean's going to have to play really well, and KU's going to have to play like they did against Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of that was Oklahoma looking past KU. K-State's not going to look past KU. K-State's not looking past KU. 10:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake tomorrow. Kickoff at 11 from Lawrence. Here's Chris Kleiman on facing Jason Bean.
He's really athletic, really fast. He's probably the fastest quarterback that we've seen thus far. I think Sanders is pretty comparable at Oklahoma State, but as far as a guy that really wants to run the ball and can stretch the field sideline to sideline and then has the speed to get around the corner or stick his foot in the ground and get north and south, it's something that has us really concerned as we begin and continue with our preparation this week. We have to find ways to try to keep him, you know, somewhat in the cylinder, in the box a little bit, and we have to do a great job rallying on him and bringing him down, because I think he does add a dimension running the football that and they try to get him the ball on the perimeter that we haven't seen yet this year.
All right, Lance Leipold, he points it out here. It's on KU to make this rivalry, this game, actually intriguing.
It's our responsibility, it's my responsibility as the head coach here at the University of Kansas to build this football program in such a way that this rivalry is a balanced rivalry and one that our whole state can, and especially our alums, can get behind and be an exciting game. And we know as of late we haven't done that, okay? Now, internally, you know, it's a matter of embracing what the game is of a Governor's Cup and a trophy game. You see it all, you know, you see it all over Sports Center and other places about what those are and the excitement that goes around them and what you can build.
K-State won this game last year 55-14. Here's another reason why I think KU has problems against K-State in the rivalry game. And you may say, well, it's not that big a deal. You know why K-State gets up for this game more than KU? And it sounds weird to say because KU is the one that should get up for K-State because they just get their butt kicked every year. 53 kids on the roster for K-State are from Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
19 for KU are from Kansas. In fact, the story is that Cooper Beebe was told by Clint Bowen, coach at KU, not to come to KU. That came out this week. Lance Leipold's mentioned it, and I think he's absolutely dead on right. In order to change things, they've got to do a better job with their walk-on program. They've got to actually have Kansas kids on the roster in regards to this rivalry. Because if you think about it, 53 kids on one roster, 19 on the other, who do you think is going to have more motivation to represent and wave the flag of who's the best football team in the state of Kansas? It's K-State, believe it or not.
I saw an Instagram post the other day from Ryan Mueller who put it K-State, obviously, in the early 2010s or somewhere around that area. I can't remember when he was there, but he was like, we never talked about losing to Kansas in this game. We just talked about making it as embarrassing as possible.
Sure.
We wanted to just run them off the field and embarrass them.
That's where rivalry should be.
You know, Ryan Mueller's a Kansas kid and had that in him, you know, and I think that's, you know, that's the mentality. I never worry about K-State overlooking KU because of that.
Yes.
Because they understand what that means, and they're pretty prideful about this matchup because they're dominant in this matchup, and they don't want to lose that dominance. You know, there was a couple years there, the last 2 years of David Beatty against Bill Snyder, where KU could have easily won those games.
Yes.
And KU should have won the game in Manhattan. I witnessed all of it with my own eyes. They should have won that game.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but K-State was able to get wins in both of those years. DJ Reed helped them out the year before in Lawrence with a kick return for a
special teams.
Seems like special teams always makes the difference in this game, if it's close or if it's a blowout.
Agreed.
And so, you know, it's 12 in a row, and this team for K-State is not about to let that streak in. So it doesn't look good for KU, I don't feel like, on Saturday, especially with K-State starting to feel a little bit better about themselves anyway with the wins they've had the last couple of weeks.
5-3, they've won their last two. K-State's a 24-point favorite. The over-under on this game is 55. I've said this almost every year like clockwork. No matter what the spread is, take K-State.
Yeah.
I've said that over and over and over. And I do think the Lance Leipold factor could be a little bit different, but at the same time, I look at KU and they played five Big 12 games, and four they've been run out of the gym, and games went over at halftime.
Yeah.
Now, K-State I don't think is as explosive offensively, so I think that's what might allow this game to be a little bit more reasonable. I don't think K-State's going to win at 55-14. I don't think it'd be quite that bad. The spread is 24. The over-under is 55. I come up with K-State winning 38-14. It won't be a complete gigantic blowout, but it'll be a very comfortable win for K-State. Mm-hmm. That's how I see it.
Yeah. I was going to say like a 41-14 or something like, just something similar to that.
Okay. All right, the Big 12 slate of football, K-State at KU, 11 o'clock, 10:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake tomorrow. Baylor at TCU at 2:30, Oklahoma State, West Virginia at 2:30, and Texas, Iowa State. Texas lose, they'd be under 500. That'd be hilarious. And then they got the monkey issue this week, if you haven't heard about that. I mean, a monkey issue, Halloween, bit of kid. Read it for yourself. It's wild. 6:30 is that kickoff, Texas, Iowa State. Top 25 matchups. Well, let's start with this one. Ohio State ranked fifth in the country. Remember, they're really good, even though they haven't beaten anybody. They're going to play Nebraska. Once again, they won't have beaten anybody if they win this game. No offense, Husker fans. You know what you are, 3-6. Well, we could almost be 9-0. Yeah. You know what? I could almost be a supermodel. Okay, you know, just have a little plastic surgery here and there, and I think I could do it. But I'm not going to spend the money, not going to happen, and Nebraska's not going to be 9-0 because they make plays to lose games, and they deserve to lose those games because they don't make the deciding winning plays. Why is tomorrow going to be any different? Listen, I think of all the games Nebraska has played this year, and you look at, and by the way, it's 11 o'clock kickoff on Fox tomorrow, early in the morning. Ohio State's favored by 14, which I think is a little bit low. I know Nebraska's played well against Michigan State, should have beat them, no doubt. They could easily beat Oklahoma on the road, and they play Michigan really well at home, but still found a way to make a mistake. A lot of close games this year. You know, obviously, Minnesota, Purdue still found ways to lose. I do not see this game being close. I think this is the game where it just implodes. I think this is the game where Nebraska gets rolled. I think this is the game after this game where Nebraska fans say the sellout streak's not worth it anymore. And let's be honest, there are some boosters that are paying to keep the streak going.
Yeah.
And when will those boosters finally get tired of wasting their money? right now. And I'm not saying that Scott Frost should be fired. Now, I'm not saying he shouldn't. I'm just saying that Nebraska tomorrow, they have played so many of these teams really well. Yes, they're going to have opportunities to still beat a Wisconsin team that, by the way, is a joke that they're in the top 20 in the college football playoff ranking. They have beaten no one except Iowa, and their offense is horrendous. They've got, like, 9 interceptions and 4 touchdown passes, and they're a top 20 team in the college football playoff ranking. Okay, whatever. And then Iowa, they'll get Iowa at home, and Iowa's not quite as good as they were earlier in the year. So Nebraska's going to have a few more opportunities to win. The question to me is, you get to that final game against Iowa, and if you're not bowl eligible and can't be bowl eligible, I believe that game is at home. I mean, I'll be senior day, I guess. Mm-hmm. But will that sellout streak end here in the next few weeks at Memorial Stadium? Now, if Nebraska can play close, or if they win tomorrow, obviously pulling off the upset, that changes the dynamics. But I don't know, man. I got this, and I've been pretty good at predicting Nebraska this year. That's the one thing I've gotten right this year. And I said, except Michigan State, I actually thought they'd get rolled in Michigan State. I did have that one wrong. But I just have the feeling that they're due to get blown out by the better team. I think Iowa State is the better team. I think Nebraska, Adrian Martinez, maybe is a little bit shaken after 4 interceptions last week. I do know that Scott Frost is going to rally the troops and say, hey, listen, this is once again this is our best opportunity the rest of the way to get that marquee win. We've been very close against Michigan, very close to Michigan State. Guys, we're going to break through. At some point, it's going to happen. And we're going to have it at home in a place that can be jacked and hyped and everything else. I don't see it happen.
No, and I, especially after last week and just putting you at 3-6 now, and I don't feel like this team is going to have that same incentive that they've had most of the year against these types of teams, right?
Especially the next two after this one if they lose tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because they'd be 3-7 and they'd be done.
And technically, I guess they're still can be bowl eligible even if they go 5-7.
True.
But I just feel like it's a team that's – I'm not going to say that Scott Frost has lost them. But what I'm going to say is they're just not going to have that same passion about going out and playing. And if you don't have that against a team like Ohio State, it adds up to something really, really bad happening and a blowout. And I'm with you. I feel like that's the way it's going to go down tomorrow.
If he lost them, they would have already had an embarrassing performance. And they haven't. And I give credit to Scott Frost and staff for that. That the team is still playing hard. You know, they're right there at the end. They just still continue to shoot themselves in the foot and find a way to lose games. And I think they'll come out motivated and fired up tomorrow the best they can. I just think Ohio State's the better team. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Ohio State's the Ohio State of the past. I'm not convinced Ohio State is a top 5 team. I think they're a top 10 team or top 15. And, you know, if Nebraska jumps out early, then that's going to give everybody excitement. The crowd will be into it. I just think Nebraska's due to have a bad game against one of the better teams in the country. I think they're due to get blown out. And that's my question is, I don't think Scott Frost has lost this team at all. I think he's lost some of the fan base, clearly. But I don't think he's lost his team at all because they're right there and they're competing and they're fighting to the very end. But if they get blown out tomorrow, let's say it's 55-14 like K-State KU last year. If that happens tomorrow, then I think all of a sudden the hot seat is flaming hot for Scott Frost. And then Husker fans are going to say, see, our kids, they've given up on him. They quit on him. Even if that's not true, people are going to say that tomorrow. And I think you could see a really, really bad situation for Nebraska tomorrow getting blown out at their own place in front of the fans who will probably start booing. They started to last time against Ohio State. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's a great game. I'd love to see the Huskers win this game. I really would because I'd love to see Ohio State put back in their place because they shouldn't be ahead of Cincinnati in the rankings. It's an absolute utter joke. But I don't see it happening. Here's Scott Frost on Ohio State's offense. They are very talented.
These guys have elite talent. Everywhere. Offensively, they have elite talent. I think they got 3 NFL wide receivers and huge offensive line and a really good tight end and a freshman running back that right now is playing about as well as anyone in the league. So, you know, if you try to stop something, they're going to beat you with something else. And you just got to play a sound, solid game.
Sound and solid game. Nebraska somehow, some way, at some point in the game, doesn't. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
Nebraska hosting Ohio State tomorrow, 11 a.m. on Fox. Ohio State a 14-point favorite, number 5. They're 7-1, Nebraska 3-6. Elsewhere in the top 25, Baylor, number 12, is at TCU. TCU with an interim head coach, Gary Patterson, stepping down last week after the K-State game. San Diego State ranked 24th is at Hawaii. Indiana's at number 7, Michigan, who will try to bounce back after losing to Michigan State. Number 9, Wake Forest, undefeated at North Carolina. Missouri is at number 1, Georgia. Good luck with that, Missouri. Liberty's at Ole Miss, who's ranked 16th. Illinois is at number 20, Minnesota. Pittsburgh ranked 25th at Duke. Auburn, number 13, is at Texas A&M, number 14. Oklahoma State, number 11, at West Virginia. Tulsa's at number 6, Cincinnati. Wisconsin, 21's at Rutgers. Navy's on the road at number 10, Notre Dame. Michigan State, number 3, is at Purdue. That is a scary game, I think, for Michigan State. Number 17, Mississippi State, is at Arkansas. LSU's at number 2, Alabama. That's usually a great game, but this year maybe not so much. LSU's 4-4, Alabama's 7-1. Although I could see LSU playing them pretty tight, though. Kentucky is number 18. They host Tennessee, and Iowa's fallen all the way from number 2 to 22 with 2 losses. They're at Northwestern. It's funny. Iowa loses 2 games, and they fall from 2 to 22. If Alabama loses 2 games, they fall from 2 to 4. Just saying. Just throwing it out there. Food for thought.
But those teams that Alabama's losing to are way better than the ones that Iowa's losing
They're
to.
Way better. They're the best of the unranked teams that they lose to. Yeah, so they play the best unranked team of possibilities of unranked teams. Yeah, something like that. All right, the MIAA, Central Missouri is at Missouri Western this weekend. Washburn at Pittsburgh State at 1 o'clock. Go Gorillas. Fort Hays State is Northeastern State. Lincoln is at Emporia State. Northwest Missouri State at Missouri Southern. And Nebraska Kearney is at Central Oklahoma. So Fort Hays State tomorrow at 1 o'clock in Oklahoma against Northeastern State. Got some kids from North Central Kansas that play for Fort Hays State, so best of luck to them coming up tomorrow. All right, time to turn our attention to National Football League. We're coming up on Sunday. It's pregame at 2 o'clock, kickoff 3:25. It is the Packers at the Chiefs. Packers won 7 in a row. They're 7-1, and no Aaron Rodgers due to COVID-19. It appears that he's not vaccinated, so if he had been, he would have had a much better chance to clear protocols and been ready to go, but apparently he is not, so he's not going to play. We're denied Mahomes versus Rodgers for the third time. One time when they're actually going to play each other, Mahomes had the dislocated kneecap a couple years ago, so it's Matt Moore versus Aaron Rodgers, and the Chiefs almost won that game with Matt Moore at quarterback, it should be pointed out. Lost by a touchdown. And then, of course, last year, I was hoping it would be Rodgers versus Mahomes, and then, you know, horrible defensive call before halftime by the Packers, and then LaFleur deciding not to trust his quarterback, the MVP, on a fourth down and kicking a field goal with 2 minutes to go and giving the ball back to Brady when he only needed one first down to seal it. Didn't make a lot of sense to me, but anywho, could have been Rodgers, Mahomes, and Super Bowl 55. Instead, it was not. So here we are. Yay, finally. People spent a lot of money to go to this game at Arrowhead. We're going to be Rodgers and Mahomes. We're finally going to get the State Farm Insurance Bowl game that we expected. No. Nope, not going to happen. So instead, it's the next best thing, right? Mahomes, think about this for a second. This is the next best thing. Mahomes versus love. I mean, Mahomes is a lovable guy, and Mahomes is, you know, happily not married yet. Has a fiance, has a young kid. I mean, you know, Mahomes knows all about love, man. So he's going to have to go up and beat love. Now, it's hard to beat love. I mean, love conquers all is what I've been told. How can you you know what? Now that I think about it, Todd Clover is absolutely right. This is an automatic loss because you cannot beat love. Love conquers all, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Except for tennis players, love means nothing.
Oh, there we go. You saved the day. You saved the day. You saved the day. All right. Jordan Love's going to get his first career start with the Packers. He was a first-round pick a few years ago. Everybody's like, what are the Packers doing? Could have got help for Aaron Rodgers on offense. Could have helped the defense. And now Jordan Love is going to be the guy on Sunday at 3:25 is kickoff. Here's Andy Reid on preparing for the Packers with no Aaron Rodgers.
We get ready for Aaron Rodgers, and then whoever they put in, you've got to be ready for it. You just watched this last weekend. I mean, two quarterbacks come in that hadn't had an opportunity to play much, if at all, in one game. So, you know, our guys are aware of that. It's you get yourself ready to play. This league, I mean, they're small margins, man. So you get, it's a true team sport. You get yourself ready to go.
All right, what does Mahomes think about his good co-star in the State Farm Insurance commercials, Aaron Rodgers not playing this week?
It's definitely disappointing. I mean, when you get to see an all-time great like him play, and I've kind of watched his game for a long time, feeling that I play a similar style, you always want to compete against the best. Hopefully he's healthy. It's not too bad. I'm sure he'll come back from it stronger than he was before.
You know, it'd be hilarious if State Farm would have quickly thrown together a production set there in Kansas City and had Jordan Love and Mahomes film a quick State Farm Insurance commercial and debut it during the game. That would be pretty funny. I'm sure it didn't happen, though. Here's Mahomes on Jordan Love.
He's super talented. I got to watch him watch some games he played in college, obviously, and he was slinging it around the field, making a lot of plays happen. And then he, what he's done in the preseason, I mean, he did had a great preseason, played really well. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll be ready. They have a great offense, and he'll be able to step in and try to do what he can to try to have success.
All right, Jordan Love is 23, played at Utah State, and it will be interesting to see. 6'4", 219 pounds. He's a strong dude. He's a mobile dude. He can run the ball. You know, he can throw it, obviously. He's drafted first round. You can't, if you can't throw the ball, you're probably not going to be drafted, especially in the first round. Mm-hmm. And this is what's interesting in the dynamics of this game for me is the unknown. Like, you know when Rodgers plays, he's going to probably play well, all right? Mm-hmm. You know he's going to make plays, and there are going to be times where the Chiefs think they've got him, and they don't, and he's going to throw a BB down the field and make a big play. And you pretty much know Mahomes probably is going to do the same thing. The unknown is one of the most toughest things to deal with in life, is the unknown. You want certainty. And it is amazing how we've gone from, and this is true of some people in Chiefs Kingdom, I've seen it, and I understand it too. Based on the way the Chiefs have played recently, especially against the Titans and the Giants, I understand where Chiefs fans are coming from when, as soon as that game was over on Monday night, you're like, oh, dear Lord, we have no chance to beat the Packers. We're going to lose the Rodgers. It's going to be ugly. I understand the thinking. So we've gone from, though, in a span of just a few days, there's no way we're going to win. Our defense isn't good enough to handle Rodgers. The Giants were horrible. We barely did anything offensively. And there's, I mean, you know, we are what we are. And if we play like that, we're going to get run out of the building at our own house. To now going, oh, we're going to win this game because Aaron Rodgers isn't playing. Jordan Love is quarterback. And, like, it's still the same defense. Jordan Love doesn't play defense for the Packers, so it's still the Chiefs offense that's struggling. Like, to me, the interesting part of this whole thing is Chiefs fans not fully understanding that really nothing has changed for the Chiefs. Their defense is still their defense. Their offense is still turning the ball over at an alarming rate. They've been pressing, and the Packers' defense is still the same with or without Aaron Rodgers. So the difference is, obviously, a quarterback's a big thing, obviously, at Green Bay, that you have Rodgers and now you go to Jordan Love. But here's the thing. There's no film on Jordan Love. There's college film, but there is no film other than some preseason stuff. There is no film on Jordan Love for the Chiefs to deal with. Now, I'm going to rewind the time capsule back to last year. Early in the year, the Chiefs went to L.A. to take on the Chargers. And eyed up the game time. I remember I was in the car listening. And I remember Mitch Holtis going, and we got big news on the sideline. He went to the sideline and said that Tyrod Taylor, who's supposed to be the starting quarterback, was had a lung punctured because the doc messed up or the trainer and given him a painkiller shot and whoops, hit the lung. And so then it was, all right, Justin Herbert, just boom, just like that, day of the game, just an hour before the game, he's going to start. And he played very well against the Chiefs. The Chiefs didn't do a very good job defensively against him, and the Chiefs nearly lost that game and would have if Anthony Lynn would actually maybe had some guts and went for it fourth and won in overtime. The Chargers very well could have won that game. The Chiefs had no time to prepare for Herbert at the last second. Fast forward now. They at least have some days to prepare for Jordan Love, unlike Justin Herbert. But once again, there was no pro tape on Justin Herbert except for preseason, and they really didn't have time to watch it last year anyway. This year, that's all they got to go off of as well. And we've seen Mike White, of all people, an undrafted guy out of Western Kentucky, no film on him, light up the Bengals, who defensively were very good against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens the week before. Mike White threw for over 400 yards, and they took care of the Bengals. I do see a scenario where Jordan Love, I'm not saying the Chiefs would be better off facing Rodgers instead of Love, because that does seem kind of blasphemous to say, but you knew what you're dealing with Aaron Rodgers. You don't know what Jordan Love, and it's also difficult for Packer fans because you don't know what you're going to get either. I mean, you're hoping Jordan Love is going to be the next Aaron Rodgers. You know, we didn't know a lot about Aaron Rodgers till Favre was out gone, and then they handed over to Rodgers like, oh, God, everybody was whining and moaning and crying in their beer up in Lambeau about Favre leaving and Rodgers is going to be the quarterback. And then all of a sudden, it's like, hey, this guy, holy cow, this kid's pretty good. He might be better than Favre. Who knows? Jordan Love might be better than Aaron Rodgers. And the Packers will be 3-for-3 on quarterbacks the last few decades. We don't know. Maybe there's something the Packers saw. They're like, we can't pass on Jordan Love a couple years ago. And, yeah, we could help Aaron Rodgers, and they got ripped for it. But they drafted their guy. You know, the Chiefs got ripped for trading up 17 spots to get Mahomes. Why didn't you draft Deshaun Watson? Looks like a pretty good decision today, doesn't it? You know, why did the Chiefs go move all the way to get Mahomes? He's a turnover machine, which actually was totally untrue and a lie. If you go back and watch and look at his numbers, Texas Tech, it's not even close. He was not a turnover machine. And so there was all this knock against the Chiefs. And the Chiefs are like, dude, we got our guy. We're happy with our pick. We picked who we wanted. We knew that he's special. Who's to say the Packers don't feel the same way about Jordan Love? That a blessing in disguise would be that this is the last year for Rodgers. He was holding out during the offseason, wasn't happy. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise that Aaron Rodgers, they're going to trade him at the end of this year. And you know what? Maybe it's a blessing in disguise that Aaron Rodgers got COVID or whatever the case may be, to where now Jordan Love gets an opportunity and he might just run with it. And could there be a better opportunity for Jordan Love to run with it against Patrick Mahomes and a defense that isn't very good? I mean, it's not like Jordan Love's going out and taking on the Ray Lewis Ravens. He's not playing the Giants defense from back in the day. He's not playing the 85 Bears or the Steel Curtain from the Steelers, the Doomsday Dallas Cowboy defense. He's playing the Chiefs. There's not many other defenses you prefer to open up against than the Chiefs defense. It really isn't.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs don't know what he really is all about. So I think it is a little bit scary, and I do think there is a factor of the Chiefs. This sounds crazy to say. They're 4-4, and they should get up for everybody because every game is kind of a must-win right now for them. But I think it's fair to say that sometimes you get all excited about a marquee matchup, and you're going to elevate your game, and then all of a sudden you play a backup, and you just let your guard down. And I could go back to last year. You know, when the Chiefs always played the Patriots, they got up for it because it was Brady. Last year, the Chiefs played against Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, he was out that game.
Yeah,
Hoyer, wasn't it?
I believe.
Yeah,
Hoyer started.
I believe he did, and he played horribly. But the Chiefs didn't win that game by very much.
Yeah,
the Chiefs were flat. I remember Mitch talking about it. They were flat because they couldn't get up for it. Because if it was Brady, they would have. And there is that part of the equation to think about with this game. I am concerned about this game. This sounds crazy to say. I know it does. I am a little bit more concerned about this game because of the unknown with Love than I was with the known Aaron Rodgers. Because I felt like the Chiefs were capable, not saying they would have, we'll never know now, I thought the Chiefs were capable of this being their turning point of the season. I know they played bad the last 2 weeks, but at some point they're going to put it together, at least for one game, I feel. Mm. I truly believe they're going to look awesome. And maybe the rest of the season, who knows? But I think at least one of the next 9 games the Chiefs played, they're going to look awesome. I mean, the law of averages, they're that talented. You know, they were so bad against Tennessee and not good against the Giants. They're bound to at least have a game. Maybe it's not till December. They're going to have a game where they're going to look awesome. The defense is going to play well. The offense is going to do great things like they used to. They're not going to turn it over, and special teams might even be good. I can see that happening. Well, why can't it happen against the Packers? If it can happen for Romeo Crennel and Kyle Orton against the undefeated Packer team coming to Arrowhead years ago, why can't it happen for the Chiefs? And I was leaning towards going, I'm going to pick against the norm, because when everybody's jumping off the ship, that's the time I usually jump on. When people are panicking in the stock market and selling everything, that's the time they actually buy. Okay? The time when everybody's jumping off the ship saying the Chiefs season's over, this and that, they said some things like that a few years ago when they were 6-4 and lost to Tennessee and blew that game. I remember. So I was thinking this would be the turning point for the Chiefs. They're going to play their best game, and they're going to beat Aaron Rodgers and the Packers because they'll be up for it. It's marquee. It's huge. Mahomes, Rodgers, blah, blah, blah. And now that is dampened considerably to where it's Jordan Love. Even the fan base won't be as excited about this game. And that's the part that scares me, the unknown of Jordan Love, because as we all know, love conquers all.
Yeah, this is a team that you would think the way they're playing this year would understand that they can't let down.
Yes, you would hope, you would think.
But this is also a team that is playing this year in a form and fashion that it scares me.
Well, they played down to the Giants.
Not playing, exactly.
And the Washington football team and the Eagles.
And they've not played down. They've just not played against the Titans, at times against the Bills.
Yeah.
They were just not playing good at all.
Yeah.
And we've seen that in a lot of games. I mean, you play down to your competition, but maybe you are what you are. Mm-hmm. at this point with the Giants game, with the Washington game in the first half. You know, that's just who we are right now.
Right. And that's why people think that the Chiefs aren't going to beat Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. And but I'm kind of on your side there. That's why I don't think they're going to beat Jordan Love. And because I feel like this team just still is not in the right frame of mind, I guess, is what I'm looking for. And then if you add the fact that Rodgers isn't playing, and so that gives them some sort of false security, like, hey, we can go out and beat this team. Aaron Rodgers isn't playing. And then it messes up with what they're doing trying to prepare for this game. Mm-hmm. Because you are, you're zoned in if you see Aaron Rodgers on the other side of the field. You're zoned in for that game because you know the importance of it. You know how big that big of a stage that is, absolutely, not just in Kansas City, but in the NFL.
National stage.
With the Mahomes-Rodgers matchup. And I think your focus is a lot different for that game. And I don't know. I'm kind of with you. I feel worse about this game specifically because of what they did against the Giants, mm-hmm, and weren't able to do things the way that they should have and be able to really control that game. That they're not going to be in the right headspace going into this game on Sunday, and I think the Packers are still going to win. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a close game, I feel like, coming down to the end, but I still think Green Bay is going to win.
You know, I really haven't thought that far ahead as to making an official prediction on this game because I was going to pick the Chiefs over Rodgers.
Yeah.
And now people are going to be like, well, if you're going to pick them over Rodgers, how can you not pick them over Love? It's because of the things we just said. I'll say the Chiefs somehow find a way. I'm not thinking in my head now. I'll just say the Chiefs somehow find a way. They're just so due to finally play a good game. They're due. Now, Melvin Ingram is expected to play, last I heard. That might help. And you move Chris Jones inside. We saw Jones get some pressure last week playing inside. Now, the Packers are a better offensive line than the Giants because they were all banged up. So that could help. Nick Bolton, Willie Gay look like they're making, they got capable of making some plays. Just please get Sorensen off the field as much as you can. That's what's going to kill you. And maybe that's a good thing that Rodgers is out because he would have picked apart Sorensen, and now Love won't be able to identify that as much. I know that Steve Spagnuolo, against a young quarterback, he's going to throw him a lot of different looks. There's going to be zero pressure. There's going to be a cover zero where they're going to bring everybody. And is Love going to be able to handle it? I think there might be times he escapes when the Chiefs should have him tackled.
Mm-hmm.
Rodgers is mobile, but Love is more mobile, from what I understand. And stronger lower body to where he could break a few tackles. And they're going to have some running plays in for Love, I would imagine, in this game. A few. And we know the Chiefs struggled against other quarterbacks that run the ball a little bit. So I am very concerned. I think I'm more concerned about this game with Rodgers not playing. I'm unlike most of the Chiefs. I think it's the easy thing and the obvious thing to say, well, we're going to win because Rodgers isn't playing. And I think it's easy to say, well, we're going to lose because Rodgers is playing. But if you really analyze it and look at it, I think there's reason to believe, and you see what you've seen the last few weeks with teams going up against backup quarterbacks, the backup quarterbacks have fared very well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Trevor Siemian came in for the Saints, their third-string quarterback, and they beat the Bucs. I mean, that game when he came in was 7-0.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was against Tom Brady. So, now granted, he was at home. You know, the crowd noise could be a big factor in this one for Love. That's one thing you got going for you there. I'm very concerned about this game. Maybe more so. It's crazy to say, I know. More so because of the unknown of Jordan Love. All right, the NFL schedule. By the way, injury report. This is good news, although I don't know if it is. This is funny to say, too. Mike Rimmers is the only guy that has missed practice this week. That might be a good thing. Lucas Niang plays right tackle. He did a decent job against the Giants. Here's another thing. Chris Jones, full participant. Michael Burton back, fullback. Tyreek Hill, full participant. Kelsey was good to go. Nnadi, Colin Saunders now good to go. Legarius Sneed. Charvarius Ward isn't even on the injured list, so that's good. Joe Tooney, Melvin Ingram, he practiced this week after getting him from the Steelers. But there's one that stands out to me, and that's Anthony Hitchens. He's now supposedly going to be back. And I think the Chiefs better not make a mistake and play Hitchens too many snaps. Mm. If you put Hitchens on the field if you put Hitchens on the field and that means Ben Neiman's on the field less, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
But if you put Anthony Hitchens in and you're telling me Willie Gay's got to go off the field, I am going to be irate. And yet I think it's going to happen.
Likely.
And it makes me sick because I think the Chiefs are actually doing a few things more athletic to where they might be going a little bit in the right direction defensively. But once again, it's hard to tell when you play the Giants, who are missing half their starters on offense. All right, pregame 2 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake on Sunday. Elsewhere, the Falcons are at the Saints, and this would be perfect for the Saints to lose. Big win over the Bucs. They're at home. And, of course, no Jameis Winston. I don't know if Taysom Hill is going to play. Trevor Siemian, quarterback. You have a week to prepare for a backup quarterback. I think that's a dangerous game for the Saints, even though the Falcons aren't that good. Broncos 4-4 at the Cowboys 6-1. Dak Prescott says, I'm good to go. I'm going to play. Bad news for the Broncos. Patriots are at the Panthers. Both teams are 4-4. Panthers have lost 4 of their last 5. And the Patriots, I tell you, keep an eye on this team. They were my pick to make the playoffs, and they easily could be 6-2. They are starting to play some good football. The Vikings are at the Ravens. The Vikings, who knows which team's going to show up. The Ravens, last game they played, they got blown out by the Bengals. Here's a game that's hard to figure out. Browns at the Bengals. Browns are 4-4, last place in the division. Bengals are 5-3. Bengals look great, and everybody's like, oh, they're a playoff contender. They beat the Ravens, then they lost to the lowly Jets with a backup quarterback last week. The Browns have a lot of drama going on as well. This is a huge story today, which I'm going to tell you something. I think this is a story blown way out of proportion. OBJ, on his birthday today, has been released by the Cleveland Browns. That's Odell Beckham Jr. I have always felt Odell Beckham Jr. has been overrated for a good portion of his career. That's just my opinion. I know he's been very talented. I still think the amazing one-handed catch on Sunday Night Football has made him to be the guy he is. Don't get me wrong. He's had a couple of great years with the Giants, no question. But when he went to the Browns and the Browns traded for him, we talked on this show, it was like Russell Westbrook going to the Houston Rockets. How is this going to work? How is this going to work? Baker Mayfield wasn't even established yet. Like, OBJ's going to get mad at Baker at some point, right? Then OBJ's hurt all the time. And now he missed the first game against the Chiefs, if you remember, coming back from the knee surgery. And this year, he 6 games, no touchdown receptions. And last week, if you've seen the highlight, he half-assed it, and that's what he did, going up for a ball deep down the field in a very important game for the Browns against the Steelers. And it was a 3rd down play, and he didn't even try to go get the ball. He was worried about getting hit and hurt, which is not, that's definitely not team ball. And his dad's come out with all kinds of stuff, ripping Baker Mayfield, ripping the Browns, and OBJ's upset. I mean, he's speaking for his son, and so forth and so on. And so the national media's run with this, basically making Odell Beckham Jr. be out to be a victim a little bit. And about how, okay, well, you know, Baker hasn't played the greatest. Well, he's got a torn labrum, for crying out loud, in his left shoulder, left arm. That obviously can't help. I know he throws with his right arm. He's missed 1 game due to it. But OBJ hasn't done anything on the field. I mean, he takes plays off. He doesn't go for the ball, and he's worried about getting hit. And he's not the guy he once was. And it was terrific. I wonder if I can find this here real quick, because I thought this was absolutely fantastic. This was, I thought, some of the best reporting I've seen in a while. And let's see if I can find it and I can play it for you, because I would love to play it for you. Here we go. I'm going to pull this up for you, and I'm going to let you listen to this reporter who covers the Browns on a regular basis for the NFL Network. Listen to what this reporter who covers the Browns, she knows the Browns beat. It's like whoever covers the Chiefs, like Dusty and I know the Chiefs better than the Browns, all right? This lady knows the Browns better than we do. No question about it. So the national media persona and perspective is, well, God, why wouldn't a team go after OBJ and go pick him up? And Dan Orlovsky, who I really like, I think he's very good breaking down stuff, he and other people have said the Chiefs should get OBJ. Let me tell you right now, I'm going to pray to God they don't. Because OBJ is a cancer. I've always felt that way. OBJ is about OBJ. Now, granted, he hasn't been the one speaking out against Baker Mayfield, but he's used his mouthpiece that's become his dad. And he has not come out publicly saying, my dad does not represent what I think. He hasn't come out in support of Baker Mayfield. Listen to this report from the Browns reporter and given us the actual truth, unlike the national talking heads who are just like, well, Odell Beckham is the greatest guy since sliced bread, and he's got to go somewhere because he's just so talented. And as one person pointed out yesterday that talked to a GM, he said, the GM told this person, and they put it on social media, GMs think a hell of a lot less of OBJ than the national media does. That was the comment coming from a GM. Nobody wanted to trade for him. Nobody wants to take on the money, which why would you? $8 million the rest of the year, because he's a shell of himself anyway. But he's always been about himself. And now right now, here is a great report from a lady covering the Browns giving you the actual truth instead of all this made-up, make-believe, talking head people that don't do any homework, don't talk to anybody, and just go off their opinion.
Because despite whatever reports are out there, I have spoken to multiple people in this building, Andrew, who said it's not that hard. If Odell Beckham Jr. really wants to be here, he would pick up the phone and call his quarterback. He would pick up the phone and call his head coach. He would have perhaps told his father, take down that video. Maybe he would have even told LeBron James to back off and let him fight his own fight. So the thing is that the Browns players right now are saying, sure, yes, if he wants to be here, if he can help us, yeah, we'll take him back, because that is the path of least resistance. What else are they going to say right now? This is a team that, under Kevin Stefanski, does its best to stay as level and as focused as they possibly can. Kevin Stefanski yesterday saying that this team is desperate for a win was basically the most volatile thing that Stefanski has said in 2 years. That's being said to drive that point home, that this right now is a 4-4 team that's in the bottom of a very, very tight division and needs to keep its eye on the prize. But I can assure you of this, Andrew, if there's any sense that there's a team Baker or a team Odell here, there's just not. There's not one person that I have talked to that even doubts the ability of Baker Mayfield to lead this team. This can actually be a strong circle the wagons galvanizing moment for this team. And I'll leave you with one other thing here, Andrew. The Browns run a rhythm and timing offense. That means that Baker Mayfield throws to a specific spot at a specific time. Just because you see a receiver who maybe looks open on the field, that may not be the spot that he's supposed to be in at the time that he's supposed to be there. There are always two sides to one story, and if only one side is posting things to social media, let's remember there could be another side.
Dear Lord, that is awesome. That is one of the best reports I've ever heard from somebody. Kudos to that reporter covering the Browns. She absolutely fantastic. A+++. There's another side to the story. The national media won't let you do that. But she, right there on NFL Network, is like, I've talked to everybody. This is a bunch of, she's basically saying it's a bunch of baloney, what you're being fed by the national talking heads and national people. It's absolutely garbage. It's wrong. There is no Team Odell versus Team Baker. And she calls out Odell saying, listen, if he wanted to be here, he could be here. We act like he's the victim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could tell his dad to shut up. We were just talking yesterday about a person we knew that told his dad to shut up at a tennis meet.
Yeah.
You can tell your dad to shut up if he's overbearing. And, you know, you can. You have the right to do it. Now, dad might not like it too much, but
yeah,
you can still do it. But Beckham Jr. has been very quiet through this whole thing. Now, why is that? Because I think it means he truly feels the way his dad does. And why is that going to change if he goes to the Chiefs and Mahomes doesn't throw the ball? Like, do you really think OBJ going to the Chiefs is going to be a good fit? You got Kelce and Hill, and OBJ is going to be the third option. If lucky, he's the third option. And OBJ, he got one target for 6 yards against the Steelers. You think he's going to get lots of targets? I mean, Josh Gordon can't get targets with the Chiefs. I mean, that's all. Every single guy, every single wide receiver that pops up, oh, the Chiefs should go get Brandon Cooks. The Chiefs should trade for this guy. They should get OBJ. They can't have 33 receivers. Okay? Go with the guy that's been there the last 3 or 4 weeks learning the system in Josh Gordon, and he doesn't cost you hardly any money, and he's still got some upside perhaps. So you go ahead, tall, big receiver. I know Odell Beckham Jr. is tall receiver too, but Gordon's less of a problem in a locker room than OBJ would be. So, and plus the media distraction that comes with that. So, no, the Chiefs, they should stay. I think, honestly, any team in the NFL right now that's a contender should stay away from him. You know, the Saints would make the most sense because, but then they got a third-string quarterback now playing, so that doesn't make sense. He ain't going to be happy not getting the ball from Trevor Siemian. Michael Thomas is out for the year. The Saints could use a receiver perhaps, but I don't think the Saints are going to do that. Michael Thomas has been a cancer the last 2 years with the Saints. You really think they're going to replace cancer with cancer?
No.
That's just dumb. I don't know if Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be picked up by anybody, and if he is, I think it's going to be a middle-of-the-road team or a team that's not that good trying to sell some tickets.
Yeah.
Odds are he's going to clear waivers. So that means he'll be cheap to pick up. You don't have to pay it for his contract. But let's stop with the OBJ acting like he's an all-pro receiver. He hasn't been for at least 2 years.
Yeah, and you're not getting a guy that's invested in what you're trying to do as an organization at all.
No.
I mean, you're getting a guy that is invested in, like you said, OBJ. And other than that, there's nothing that he cares about. And you're not going to add a player like that to your team. If you're trying to make the playoffs, if you're in an actual run right now to where you feel like you can make the postseason, and I don't even think you would want that guy on a postseason roster.
No way.
You know, you might like his talent if he actually went back to you know, some of his early years of the talent that he had. I mean, because he was catching a lot of balls for a lot of yards early in his career. And, you know, he did, I think, live a little bit off that one catch that you talked about. But, I mean, he there's no doubt he had the talent and the ability to be able to make tough catches, to be able to get tough yards, right? Mm-hmm. But lately, that's not who he is. He's not the same person. He's not the same player.
No.
And you're not going to invest a lot of time, effort, money into a guy that doesn't care about the franchise or the organization, and all he cares about is himself. I mean, that's just – it's not smart for anybody to do with that. And I know there's some reward there if he does return to what he was before, but there's a lot of risk.
Are you going to get that for a rental player for 8 games?
No.
I don't think so. It'd take him some time to get up to speed. Like Josh Gordon's still taking 3-4 weeks to get up to speed as to what packages he can run. You can only get him in a few packages and then more and more and more as you go. Plus, the quarterback's got to develop trust and be on the same page with their receivers. We see Mahomes and Kelce not on the same page lately, and they played together for years. Why is that going to instantly happen with OBJ? Anyway, he is free to sign with any team now, and they talk about the top 10 targets in regards to who should go after OBJ. They put Saints number one, Patriots number two, Raiders number three. Well, the Raiders would make perfect sense. They just saw Henry Ruggs.
I mean, the Raiders actually would make sense.
That would make sense. The Chiefs number four. There's no way. I don't see it. 49ers five, Ravens six, Cowboys seven, Packers eight, Colts nine, Eagles 10. Packers aren't going to go get OBJ. I'd be very surprised by that. If I'm the Cowboys, I don't need him. I've got CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. The Ravens, maybe that makes some sense, but John Harbaugh's a locker room guy. I just don't see a lot of teams on this list are going to go get him. Yeah. I don't think Bill Belichick's going to be happy with grabbing that guy. That's just me.
Yeah.
So I don't really see a lot of options for him.
Yeah,
OBJ.
But the
somebody
when
will
when
give
you
him a
read,
chance.
When you read Raiders, I mean, that legitimately
sense.
Makes sense, yeah. Because they're dealing with some stuff right now, and they probably don't care who they're signing if they
another
to try to keep themselves up.
Actually,
to the
signing
top.
OBJ would be a distraction from the distraction of Henry Ruggs killing somebody.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that would be. For the Raiders, I mean, I know they're leading the division right now, and I just said playoff team's probably not going to want to sign him.
That one would make sense.
But if you need somebody and you feel like your season's just going the wrong way right now, maybe take that risk because you need a body in there that might be able to do some stuff for you.
You lost your top receiver now, Henry Ruggs, who was released because of that situation. All right, so Browns at Bengals, that's going to be an interesting game. I think the Browns will rally the wagons. I do think they will win. I think it might, but you never know. All the distraction this week might actually take too much out of them. Bills at the Jaguars, Bills are 5-2. Texans at Dolphins, Clover wanted a preview. Here's the preview. One of those teams more likely will win. Good for them. Raiders are at the Giants. Raiders are 5-2, Giants 2-6. That, I think, is a dangerous game for the Raiders. With all the distractions, Henry Ruggs and Giants are playing better. If you're a Chiefs fan, cheer for the Giants. Think about this for a second. If the Raiders lose to the Giants, which I think could happen, they'd be 5-3. Chargers are at the Eagles. I think the Chargers win that game. I think. I don't know. Chargers are struggling right now. Eagles aren't chopped liver. But even if the Chargers win, the Raiders be 5-3, the Chargers be 5-3, and the Chiefs find a way to beat Jordan Love and the Packers, the Chiefs are half a game out of first. And Chiefs fans are telling me that there's no way they're going to make the playoffs. Stop. Think about it. You just have to win your division. Everybody's all caught up in what everybody else is doing in the conference. All you got to do is beat three teams. As long as you, in regards to your record, you got to beat three teams. And you still got to play the Raiders twice, the Broncos twice, and the Chargers once. Now, their schedule is very, very tough, no doubt about it. But 5 of their 6 remaining division games are on the schedule. So if they go 4-1 or 5-0 in those division games, they're going to more than likely win the division and make the playoffs automatically, regardless of they have the worst record of all the division winners. All you got to do is win your division. And the Chiefs' division right now looks kind of flat. Remember early in the year, everybody was telling us about the AFC West, the best division in football, and we kept saying no. Well, it's not.
No,
it's not. The Packers are 4, or the Broncos are 4-4, and they're not really 4-4. They're not legitimate. The Chargers are 4-3 and got all kinds of issues defensively. The Raiders are 5-2 and got all kinds of issues off the field, and they have an interim coach. And the Chiefs got all kinds of issues, and they're 4-4. So I don't know who's going to win this division, but I'll still bet on the team that's won it the last 4 years or 5 years or whatever. I'll go with that. Packers are at the Chiefs, as we know. Cardinals are at the 49ers, and the Titans are at the Rams. There's a big game on Sunday Night Football. No Derrick Henry versus the Rams, and the Rams just picked up Von Miller. That's interesting. That's an interesting game. Mm-hmm. Monday night, Bears at the Steelers, not so interesting. All right, we end with basketball. K-State beat Pittsburgh State last night in men's exhibition play, 78-59. Bruce Weber, his team, looks like they're a team that can shoot the ball better than last year. That's a good sign for K-State men's basketball fans. Bruce says they still have some work to do. Well, I'd hope so. It's just your first exhibition game. You got it all figured out now, then Bruce can just kick back and do nothing.
It was good for us. It's a good opportunity. You got a lot of new guys, and you know, a little anxious on some plays, especially first half. The turnovers, it's something I've talked to you guys about. I've talked to our guys about. I think, you know, first half we shoot 57% from the field and 4 for 9 from three, and but we have 12 turnovers, so you lose so many opportunities to get good shots.
Did not hear the play hard chart there, so I'm very disappointed. He's not in midseason form yet, Bruce. K-State opens their season for good Wednesday against Florida A&M. KU opens up their season against Michigan State at the Champions Classic in New York on Tuesday, pregame at 5:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. And we leave you with this. Last week, the L.A. Lakers went to OKC, and they blew a 26-point lead. We're like, well, they're going to play Thunder back in L.A., so, you know, that'll be a lot different. Actually, really not. Lakers, the Thunder have won two games this year, both against the Lakers. The Lakers blew a 26-point lead against OKC last week, and LeBron didn't play. They got AD, they got Russell Westbrook, they got way more talent, right? More experience, Carmelo and all that other stuff. They blew a 26-point lead to OKC. That can't happen again, right? Week later, last night, Lakers host OKC. It's in L.A., Staples Center. No LeBron. He's out for a week with an abdominal strain. You start to wonder about all the wear and tear catching up to him now. Mm-hmm. But you still have AD. You still have Russell Westbrook. You still have other guys that are very talented. You got Melo. And the Lakers had a 19-point lead last night and blew that and lost 107-104 to the lowly Thunder, who only have two wins, both against the Lakers. In both games, they were down by 19 or more points. I thought the Lakers were supposed to be good even without LeBron. I mean, that tells you all the problems you need to know about the Lakers right now. Granted, it is early in the NBA season. They will figure it out. They're being very cautious with LeBron, which they should be early in the year. He's 37, you know, but his body's probably feels like it's 45 like mine, except he's done a lot more than I have. But they're being very careful with LeBron. But I find it kind of funny that the superstar-stacked old Lakers can't beat the young and inexperienced Oklahoma City Thunder, yeah, not once but twice, and blow gigantic leads in the process both times. That's what young teams do, is blow the big leads, right?
Yeah, I feel like when you get to the postseason, the age of this team is going to catch up to it.
I think so, too.
And I think we're seeing that in some of these games this year without LeBron playing. I mean, even if LeBron playing, I mean, it's like you said, it's still going to catch up to him at some point.
Yeah.
You know, Father Time doesn't just let everybody just roll through and skate and have no issues whatsoever.
Well, you heard the old saying, Father Time is undefeated.
Yes.
It's going to catch up to Brady at some point, maybe not till he's 50 or 55. I don't know when he can play on the senior golf tour, and then he might actually retire from the NFL. Of course, if he has offensive line that allows him to sit in the pocket for 6 seconds, he's going to play for a very long time, unless his arm falls off. All right, enjoy high school football tonight. The schedule.
Yeah, Katie Kemp, 94, 5:30 pregame kickoff, 6 o'clock. It is Frankfort at Thunder Ridge, 8-man Division II regional playoffs. And then on Z96.3 to the Lake Bullitt Trojan Channel at ncksports.com. Bullitt is at Cimarron tonight in the 2A regional. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock tonight.
Best of luck to all those area teams. We will talk to you again on Monday. We'll talk to you tonight from the football fields.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.